Welcome to Ballistic Radio. Join us as we discuss hard-won self-defense lessons, as well as the information you need to survive a violent encounter. Listen as armed professionals, industry experts, and gunfight survivors help answer all your firearms and self-defense questions while exploring your rights and responsibilities as an armed citizen. Ballistic Radio, just the facts. And now, here's your host, John Johnston.
Welcome to Ballistic Radio. I'm your host, John Johnston. Remember, you can always listen to past shows at ballisticradio.com and get the latest behind-the-scenes info, arguments, videos, photos, written articles detailing why I'm right and you're wrong. No, actually, I'm usually wrong, too. It's sort of a mutual thing. We're all learning together. Yay. At facebook.com/ballisticradio, co-hosting with me. Well, darn, no one's in here with me. Man, you guys are in trouble. So we got a good show lined up for tonight. We're going to have Paul Carlson from Safety Solutions Academy joining us to talk about training contexts. I was actually on Paul's show last week or the week before. I'm losing track of time. Talking about something similar, we're going to get a little more in-depth into it tonight. Should be pretty cool. But first, just a reminder, this segment brought to you by Wilson Combat. Wilson Combat, makers of the finest custom 1911s, ARs, and scatterguns since 1977. A legacy of quality, innovation, and service. Learn more about their firearms and accessories at www.wilsoncombat.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier, soon to be available for pre-order. Check out the new rigid, interchangeable side saddle carrier, changing how you look at shotguns forever. Find out why Steve Fisher, Chris Fry, and myself all call it the best hard mount side saddle carrier ever invented. Find out more at aridusindustries.com. And for those that don't know, that's actually, I've been trying to break one of these, two of these now, for the last, man, 4 or 5 months. Have thousands of rounds on them. I know Fisher's got a bunch, as does Chris and some other people, too. This thing is really cool. It's going to be available for pre-order shortly. I want to say the crowdfunding site goes up this week or next. So anyway, without further ado, let's get Paul on air with us. Joining us tonight, Paul Carlson. I was doing so well until I tried to say your name. Paul Carlson. Paul, how are you doing, man?
I'm good, buddy. How are you doing, man?
I'm recovering from like a cold or something, and then I have to do this silly radio show. So
right on, man. It happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So for those that don't know, who haven't heard of Paul Carlson, which seems silly, but let's say they haven't, do you mind just introducing yourself real quick? Tell me a little bit about what you do, and we'll dive right in.
Yeah, sure thing. You know, my name is Paul Carlson. I own a company called Safety Solutions Academy, and I'm the guy that's turned from professional math and science teacher to professional gun teacher. I started teaching gun courses in 2000 around the competition world and just little classes locally, and then made the shift to self-defense as I found that to be more important, and that's where I'm at today.
Okay. So you, you're also hosting a new show as well, correct?
Yeah, I've got all kinds of stuff going on with regards to media. We've got The Protected Life, which is a weekly internet show that we do over the Google Hangouts. And I've got the Safety Solutions Academy podcast, which we put out. We try and get it out a couple times a week. Sometimes we only get out a couple times a month. But good resources. You can find them at safetysolutionsacademy.com.
Excellent. And for I was on the show not too long ago, and I have been remiss in not posting the link to that episode. Though, if it makes you feel any better, I didn't actually post my show's last podcast until about 2 hours ago. So
no harm, no foul.
Yeah, you know, stuff happens, you get busy, things like that. So anyway, I guess what I want to talk to you about, man, we sort of covered this a little bit on your show, but there is a perception in our industry, at least that I've noticed, with some of the people that are going out and consuming training, so the consumers of the training product, that unless you were a Ranger, Team Delta 6 operator, you know, PJ snake eater type dude, you don't know what you're talking about, or you don't have anything worthwhile to teach. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I think those people are absolutely right. If they need to learn about Ranger, Snake Eater, Delta, SEAL Team 7, you know, hot stuff.
Right.
You know, being a math teacher, a science teacher, I couldn't teach a darn thing about that. But what I can teach you about is about information that an average person might need to know when it comes to defending themselves with a firearm, how to carry that firearm safely, securely, how to use that firearm should they need to, the laws that surround it, the changes that happen in our body. You know, I'm going to teach you the stuff that they actually need to know.
Well, and that seems to be, you know, there's a lot of discussion about training methodologies. There's a lot of discussion about, you know, ways that we approach these problems. But one of the things that has struck me recently, you know, and I kind of noticed it a little bit before, but really recently I've been thinking more and more about it as I start to shift into the training industry myself. A lot of the problems that some people are training the, you know, everyday folks for are not problems they are typically going to run into ever, you know. You know, like engaging multiple targets with a carbine. I'm not saying that carbines aren't an amazingly useful self-defense tool. They are. But the context there is much more military and law enforcement than it is for a civilian, wouldn't you say?
There's no doubt about it. And that's one of the reasons why I had a little bit of a shift away from the competitive world as well, because when we look at the types of scenarios that I might go and complete as a competitive shooter, whether that's with a handgun or a three-gun type match where we're including a rifle and a shotgun, those scenarios are going to much more resemble some kind of a military operation where we've pre-planned how we're going to assault a structure or whatever the case might be. Well, that's not my goal. That's not my context. It's not the way that I live my life. I don't go seeking out structures to clear. Right. Could I learn some things from that? Yeah, maybe I could. But the real thing is, you know, if I'm using a long gun to defend my home, I'm probably going to be in a static position waiting to ambush an adversary that's trying to harm me. That's totally different. You know, I've got a choke point that I'm going to set up in my home to be able to defend myself and my family.
Yeah. Well, that's wow. I'm like going through puberty on air. I apologize to everybody. I'll try and get myself under control next weekend.
Peter Brady, when it's time to change, right?
Yeah, exactly. God. So competition, I mean, I've actually just recently made the decision to shoot more competition, but one of the reasons that I've decided to do that is not because I feel, you know, I'm not saying that it's not going to help me in a self-defense situation, but I'm looking for very specific things out of that. And I think one of the problems when people are newer at this is that they don't know what they're getting out of what they're learning. And then they get confused and start getting the wrong idea. We got about 50 seconds left in this segment if you want to expand on that.
Sure, yeah. And I think it's not even that they don't know what they're going to get. Sometimes people don't even know what it is that they need. And I think that's the big thing that the firearms industry has done a poor job of educating consumers on, is what it is they really need to understand. You know, is it NRA basic pistol that they need for defense? I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. Is it competition they need? You know, probably not. Is it Delta Team 6 stuff? Well, probably not. They probably need some combination of the techniques and the skills that are brought in from all those different areas. And if we can serve them appropriately in that way and help them learn what it is they need to understand and their what their goals are in training, then we're probably serving our customer much better.
Well, and that's, yeah, that's something I want to talk about a little bit more. We've got to go to break, but you'd hold that thought. We'll come right back to it. Right now, we're talking with Paul Carlson. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Dark Star Gear. Whether you know the color of the boathouse at Hereford or only know the color of your mom's basement and Cheetos stained socks, Dark Star Gear has a solution to your gear carrying needs. Check out their clip-on holster for small semi-autos and revolvers, or their highly adjustable full-size AIWB holster. They even have a belt-wrapped sheath for when you need to shank a fool with your popular fixed-blade centerline knife. Really ties your EDC together, like that one rug I used to have. Designed, developed, and pressure-tested for real life, not Instagram. Find out more at darkstargear.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC, quick-detach side saddle shell carrier. Soon to be available for pre-order. Find out more. AridusIndustries.com. It's a lot of find out more. Find out more. Are you still interested? Insert Star Troopers meme here. Anyway, weird. This is so much better when I have someone in the booth to laugh at my lame jokes. I mean, I pay him to laugh at my lame jokes, but The producer's laughing. You just can't hear him. He might not even exist. Figment of everyone's imagination. Anyway, Paul Carlson. Ah, how's it going, man?
It's going good, man. It's going good. I'm here laughing at your jokes. I mean, I can hear you. I like it.
That's just because you don't you don't have any pants on and you're drinking alcohol.
That is not true. I'm using alcohol to clean my guns. Alcohol-based solution.
Ah, okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if you happen to be drinking some of it, that's, you know.
Clear like vodka. Clear like vodka.
Mm. Hail Mary full. Anyway. Yeah. So we're talking about context and people understanding what they need to know. I mean, and that starts to get into a very tenuous sort of, well, do we really know what other people need to know? And I don't like telling people I know their situation better than they do because I don't. But do you think that there are certain instances where I can, or you, or anyone, can say, you know, based off of a lot of the things that I've seen, you probably don't need to conceal carry that 500 Smith & Wesson Magnum?
I certainly think that we can take a look at what it is that someone might expect to see in a typical defensive gun use. When we look at statistics, when we look at what it is that happens over and over and over again with high frequency, we can start to break down what might be critical for some individuals to know. And if we pay attention to those most important skills, those skills that are going to be used in most of the defensive gun uses that are out there, we can start to break that down and put it into the context for the average person. I always get worried when, you know, we start to look at police statistics, for instance, to determine the distances that a gunfight might happen at or a defensive gun use might happen at.
Right.
Because the context of the law enforcement officer is plain and simple different than the context of the armed citizen. The law enforcement officer is likely to have to apprehend a suspect. And so they're probably at times going to be closing distance so that they can put hands on and take someone into custody.
Right.
That's not my job. My job is to get away, to end it as quickly as I can with as little, you know, violence as possible, as much as is needed, but as little as possible. And I think that that's something that people miss. We look at what it is that we have a lot of information on, which we do have a lot of information on law enforcement gun uses. But then what does that tell us about civilian gun uses or armed citizen gun uses? Maybe some things, maybe not other things. And we have to be careful of that.
Well, and the other interesting thing about that, too, is that I know a lot of people will, you know, get into officers killed in the line of duty.
Mm-hmm.
And they start looking at numbers like, well, officers are killed from 0 to 3 feet.
Right.
And what they fail to realize there, it's not that the gunfight started at 0 to 3 feet, though sometimes it does. It's that when the bad guy walked up and stuck the gun against the cop's head and killed him, that's where the murder occurred. And that's where that statistic is coming from. So a lot of people start using these numbers, not fully understanding what it is they're looking at or how to apply it to, you know, to everyday life, I guess.
Yeah, and
which is what you said, but
yeah, that's not even just the beginning defensive gun user that makes that mistake. That's seasoned trainers that make that mistake at times as well.
Yes.
You know, there are folks out there that are applying statistics that may or may not even be relevant to what it is that we're doing.
Right.
And you point that out very, very well with that, you know, 0 to 3 or 0 to 5 yard statistic that's, you know, in the 80% of officers are killed at those distances. Well, again, I'm not a police officer. I don't want to be a police officer. It's an incredibly difficult job with incredibly low pay and incredibly high risk.
Mm-hmm.
And I applaud those that do it, but it's not what it is that I do.
Yeah, yeah. And every time anyone says something like that, I start to question some of the decisions I'm making in my life currently. But so what do you think that the first step to all of this is identifying what we want to accomplish is?
Yeah, I think that is a really good first step, John. I mean, if we don't know where we want to end up, how are we supposed to know how to get there? And there are some things in life that are just, you know, a fabulous journey. Hey, let's see where things take us, like stamp collecting. Might be great to go about that way and just find out where it takes you.
Right.
But when we're talking about something with stakes as high as using a gun to defend ourselves or other innocent people or those that we love, I'm not sure that I'm willing to risk it on, hey, let's just see where it takes us.
Well,
I think that some self-study is really important in that.
Well, and I know that one of the things that William April talks about is taking a honest and cool self-inventory of your skills and attributes and all that. But it's I had something for this, and it totally went away. Archer reference.
Well, I think it might come in, you know, even before that. I mean, when we think about context, I define context for my students as just the circumstances that surround their life. And students need to think about where it is that they spend their time. You know, are you spending your time mostly at home or in the office? And what's that environment like? Are you at school? Are you driving a truck? What do you spend time doing when you're in that place? Are you in a situation where, you know, you're wrenching on cars and up and down and around or digging in ditches? Or are you doing accounting work while you're sitting at a computer? Those are part of your context.
Right.
What's your background? What's your training? What's your understanding? What's your physical makeup? Are you very physically fit, or are you in some way or for some reason frail?
Yeah.
And what tools do you have at your disposal? Sometimes that's based on your choices or based on your location. And then what are those goals? And if we start to look at those things, then we can start to pare it down into what it is that might be important for us to start training.
Well, and it occurred to me what I wanted to bring up. Thank you, David Williams, for sending me a Facebook message and jogging my memory. Though he didn't do it on purpose, so I'm not going to give him too much credit. but the other thing, too, that there seems to be a lot of is that people oftentimes mistake success for good tactics. And that's something, you know, past success for, well, if I got through this okay, that means I was doing it fine. And that's another trap that, you know, not only the individuals fall in, but some trainers as well, wouldn't you say?
Well, there's no doubt about it. And we can see people falling into that kind of a trap in all walks of life. I mean, hey, we made it through just fine, so it must be okay to do that again, right?
Yeah.
Well, just because you survived it doesn't mean that it was a good move.
Yeah.
And what we have to do is we have to really take stock. And that's one of the things I know you talk about, you know, Craig Douglas and his MUC course and the ECQC course a lot. But it's one of the things that I appreciate about how it is that he's developed his training is the fact that there was a constant assessment throughout his career as an undercover officer in what it is that helped him to survive situations.
Right.
And that constant assessment helped him to understand what it took in that context. And now he's done a wonderful job in transferring some of that information into the civilian context or the armed citizen context, and I appreciate that very much.
Well, and I think one of the things that struck me is he, you know, the first ECQC course, and this is me remembering this, so this does not mean that this was direct from Craig. I just want to put that out there in case I misquote him, and I don't want him to, you know, get accused of anything. But he was talking about, you know, he'd had his first shooting under his belt already as a police officer, had been in the military, you know, started doing undercover stuff, and all the stuff they had taught him did not work. And he was almost killed several different times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, was beaten very badly with a socket wrench, if I remember correctly, at one point.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's just things like that. If we can learn from other people's life-threatening injuries, it probably behooves us to do so.
But we can only do that when those people are really reflecting on and thinking about how that applies to not only them, but to other contexts as well. And that's where Craig has shined, is he's taken that and brought it from the undercover law enforcement work into what it is that it means for an average citizen. And the primary part of that is the managing unknown contacts, the muck, and how it is that we can avoid all of this in the first place.
Right.
And when we think about context, you know, everyone that we're talking to right now has the context of dealing with unknown contacts, people that they don't know the motives and the mission of on a daily basis. And having those skills has nothing to do with a gun.
Oh,
having
no.
Those skills are what's going to really pay off. And you'll never know how much it pays off because you'll never know how much you've avoided.
Well, and that's, you know, it's funny you mentioned that because I had someone asking me about, you know, what I thought my most useful course was that I've ever taken. And I can, you know, without reservation, I can say that because, you know, the number of times that I have utilized muck in my day-to-day existence versus the number of times I've run an El Presidente on somebody.
Right, right. Three somebodies.
Yeah.
While they're facing away, right.
Well, you know, I was facing away. There was one guy there, and he stood up for a really long time, so I just pretended he was all three. You know, that's just... There, I get that center access relock going. My vision goes funny. C triple.
Nice.
I don't know.
Nice.
Wow. Totally went there. So, yeah, anyway. What do you want to talk about next segment? What's something people don't think enough about? We got about 35 seconds left in this one.
There's this awesome trend these days of training in places like in and around vehicles. And I think that in some ways it's incredibly important, and in some ways it's at times misdirected. You know, I had a group of concealed carry students yesterday. I'm one of the instructors that, you know, commands a premium price for my courses, but every month I teach a concealed carry class to try and stay in touch. And some of those folks ended up in a course for a few minutes. It was a bunch of armor and rifles and cars.
Yeah, let me interrupt. We got to go to break. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by TopGunSupply.com. TopGunSupply.com is your web source for fine firearms, parts, and accessories. True product specialists committed to delivering the highest level of customer support to you. They carry top name brands including Ed Brown, Wilson Combat, Les Baris, Sig Sauer, and many more, as well as premium AR pattern rifles. Whether you are looking to protect yourself, are a first-time gun buyer, competitive shooter, TopGunSupply.com can satisfy your firearms needs. TopGunSupply.com, your premier source for SIG parts and accessories. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC Quick Detach Side Saddle Shell Carrier, soon to be available for pre-order. Would you like to know more? Visit AridusIndustries.com. Happy with what I did just then. I know what I did. Some of you know what I did, too. But you see what I did there? Anyway, just a quick reminder, we've got the Top Gun Supply monthly giveaway going on right now for a Lucas Oil gun lubrication prize package. You can get entered for that at our Facebook page, facebook.com/ballisticradio. Click the giveaways tab. You got till the end of the week. We're also doing our first ever Derpo Lantern pumpkin carving contest. Pretty much you carve a pumpkin that is somehow related to the show, send me a photo of it, and we pick our favorite one on November 1st, and I give the winner $150 via Amazon gift card. So there you go. Anyway, talking with Paul Carlson, who I had patiently waiting on hold, or maybe not so patiently. Paul, are you drunker yet?
No, not at all.
Darn.
I'm thinking actually about heading to the Facebook page and registering for that Top Gun Supply contest. I can swing by and pick up my winnings on the way to Costco, because Top Gun is just like right up the street.
They're awesome people, too. I just picked up a... Legion 226 from them, you know, and see, people get confused. I actually buy things from places, you know, as much as I would like to just get free stuff. Actually, I wouldn't like that. I kind of like paying for things since everyone,
you know, a lot of the free stuff isn't worth the price. So,
well, you know, then they own you or something like that. But great people to deal with. I've been a customer since before I was doing the show. So. But anyway, we were talking a little bit before the break. You brought up vehicle classes, which I actually think is an amazing thing to talk about real quick, because they, you know, they've gotten very popular with, you know, William Petty, for whatever reason, has blown up, gotten known as a vehicle guy. Mm-hmm. He's doing a lot of really amazing things with cars. This seems like a really good example of people not necessarily discerning what they, I mean, and I'm going to use the word need, but honestly, need doesn't have anything to do with it. If you want to go take a class, and that's awesome. That's good enough. But like you alluded to, if you have to go somewhere and you show up in armor and have a rifle, you know, it's not that you're not learning things, because you are, but what are you learning exactly?
Well, it was really an interesting insight into this idea of context that I had yesterday. And I had some students that arrived at the range for class very, very early. And so they started to drive around. And you know the facility that I do my training at. It's a big place.
Yeah.
And there's not really any signage. It's just a matter of, you know, hey, we meet at the cabin and we do this. And I guess they hadn't read the email, and they ended up in a nationally known, heck, internationally known instructor on his range, thinking that that's where they needed to be. And when they came back and finally found their way to where they were supposed to be, with the guys with guns covered up.
I really want to play Right Said Fred's I'm Too Sexy right now.
Right, of course. You know,
I'm sorry. Anyway, internationally known trainer. He's
and,
a friend of mine, just saying.
And he's a great guy.
You know, oh, yeah.
There's nothing wrong. But these people came back to my concealed carry class, and they're like, we were really afraid. Like, these guys, they all had machine guns, and they were wearing body armor, and they had, like, two or three guns, some of them, and we just didn't know what to do. And that really gave an insight into that idea of what that context is. You know, these guys look like military operators. Well, is that what they're learning? And if they're working, you know, in a team of four around a car, I don't know about you, John, but, you know, I've never really had the opportunity to work in a four-man team as an armed citizen in a vehicle.
Well, the nice thing is, I will say this, and this is sort of a semi-announcement, though I'm not. I got a guy that's going to be coming and working for me that I guess we could make a two-man team.
Well, so, there you go.
Yeah,
I like it.
It's kind of cool. So, but
that's awesome.
Yeah,
that's
I know,
awesome.
Right? That's unusual, though. That's unusual. That's not normal every day for most people.
Right. It is. And I do think that armed citizens need to think about the vehicle. I mean, if you think about the context of the average person, you know, how much time do they spend in their vehicle, around their vehicle? It's probably a lot. And the vehicle is a highly valuable, highly mobile asset that someone could want to take to scrap for $300 worth of meth.
Yeah.
And sometimes we carry around our most important prized possessions in that vehicle. You know, I think about my wife and my two wonderful daughters in the backseat of my car when someone tries to take it from me. And so there is certainly that application. But really what working around a vehicle comes down to is a solid application of the fundamentals that you learn in whatever course it is that you're taking. And just really good application of those concepts and principles. And that's what people should be training, in and around a vehicle with those solid fundamentals.
Well, and that seems to be, man, I don't know. It's just interesting to me that people, they kind of get the right idea, and they start to go down the right path, but then it sort of just like veers just a little bit, just enough to be like, you know what I mean?
Yeah, into the world of derp, and that's the challenge. And we have to make a solid line in our lives, and mostly in our heads, so that we know and understand what we're doing between training and entertainment. And there's, as you talked about, and this goes with competition as well. I'm not one of those guys that says competition is going to get you killed on the street.
Right.
But I'm also not a guy that says that competition is going to give you everything you need in defensive training.
No.
That's not what it's for. It's a game. It's for fun.
I can't
and
think
maybe
of
there
anyone.
Are some ways...
I was going to say, I can't really think of anyone that's saying that about competition anymore as far as. Not now. I mean, in the past, yes, but not
I think
now.
I think a lot of the big names that are in competition have never said those kinds of things. But
right.
I think some people gravitate to competition and think that when they start. And there are some things that the average shooter at the very beginning can pick up from competition they can't get other places. For example, drawing from the holster.
Yep.
Where else can you draw from a holster under the pressure of time and the stress of competition in view of all of your friends and your buddies? Most ranges don't allow it. And so people head to competition because they need and want that experience. And the unfortunate thing is they spend all weekend, you know, maybe all day, 8 hours to get six draws in.
Right.
And so that's the kind of efficiency that is going to be frustrating to those shooters when they really stop to think about it. But the problem is competition is so much fun that you don't want to think about the reality of it. You don't want to think about the practicality of it.
Yeah.
Instead, you'd rather just have fun with your friends. And I'll tell you what, I miss competition. You know, this coming weekend is the last match of the season. I haven't been to one yet at my local club, and I miss my buddies from competition.
Right.
Because I'm out on the range training and doing what it is. And that's okay. I'm good with it. I'm not whining in my milk. I'm not crying in my milk. But the idea is that I get it. Or my vodka, a cleaning solution.
Right.
I get it. I understand where people are coming from.
Well, and that brings to mind an interesting question. And I think that Rob Pincus catches a lot of flack for sort of an aspect to this question, but do you think that someone who is interested in self-defense needs to be an amazing shooter?
No. I mean, I think the answer is no. And we know several reasons why.
Well, you and I do, but I kind of want to talk about it a little bit.
Yeah, let's do it. You know, I think the first reason why is because there are lots of people that successfully defend themselves without any training at all.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we should accept that as an excuse for, well, I guess I don't need to train. because there are also plenty of people in the course of a year that aren't able to defend themselves.
Yeah.
And when we defend ourselves, and we defend ourselves with damages on either side, those consequences can be difficult to bear. Whether it's medical injuries to you or to other people because it took too long to win the fight, or not understanding the legal aspects or the medical aspects, I think that we can do a better job of defending ourselves when we have some experience. The decision-making that happens in a defensive gun use, I think, is probably the most complex part. And if you don't know how to operate the gun and you're spending conscious thought time figuring out how to operate the gun in that defensive gun use, you're wasting time that you should be using to end the situation. And so I think we need to have training to the point where we are able to, in an automated fashion, run the gun. We make a decision that, okay, I need to shoot, and then the rest of what it is that happens, happens without a lot of conscious thought, so we can focus on making the right decisions
right.
in the situation. And so I think that training is so important from that standpoint.
Well, and it seems to be, too, that it, and the reason why I bring it up is that, and we got about a minute and 10 seconds mm-hmm. left in this segment, but I've come to the realization, and I'm not saying that, you know, I honestly think everyone should be the absolute best shooter that they're capable of being.
Sure, yep.
But something that I realized, and I don't know why it took me so long to realize this, not everyone can go to every single training class that they want to go to, and not everyone can shoot 100,000 rounds a year.
Right.
In fact,
right.
the people that can do that are amazingly rare. And I was kind of projecting, you know, some of my own realities on everyone else. I don't think that's a good way to be.
Well, you know, as a guy that can go and talk to lots of instructors, they say, hey, come and audit my class. Come take my class for free. It's really easy for me to do that, especially when somebody sends me ammunition to do it.
Yeah.
But the fact of the matter is the average citizen needs their concealed carry permit. They need two more days of defensive training. They need some medical training. They need legal training, like in the David Williams Deadly Force Decisions course. And they need to have some avoidance training, like from William April. And if we can get those things down pat, then we're really making a difference in our survivability.
Right. Well, we'll talk about that a little bit more. Right now we're talking with Paul Carlson. You're listening to Ballistic Radio. Welcome back to Ballistic Radio. This segment brought to you by Tac Strike Steel Target Systems, makers of the quarter scale steel target and the Archer M target stand, which are literally the best steel targets and target stands I've ever used. Fit their steel targets with more than 50,000 rounds of rifle, pistol, and shotgun ammunition without a single problem. For more information, visit them at TacStrike.com. And also, Aridus Industries and the patent-pending QDC quick-detach side saddle shell carrier, soon to be available for pre-order. Check out the new rigid, interchangeable side saddle carrier, changing how you look at shotguns forever. Find out why Steve Fisher, Chris Fry, and myself call it the best hard mount side saddle carrier ever invented. Would you like to know more? Visit AridusIndustries.com. So anyway, I'm going to drive that Starship Troopers reference into the ground like a nuclear hand grenade. Nuclear? Paul Carlson, how's it going?
It's going good, man. I was kicked back there leaning against the wall back in my chair and thinking I was listening to the show, and then I thought all of a sudden, oh, wait, no, I'm actually on the show. I got to get this back together.
It's like a dream come true.
A dream come true.
Yeah, not really. God, I hope no one ever says that to me, because if so, I'm just going to, like, hang up on them immediately and tell them.
I can't wait to see you the next time. I'll give you a big hug and tell you it's a dream come true.
Yeah, I know, right? I promise not to cry. So anyway, we were talking about stuff that seemed very important before the last commercial break, and it probably still is very important. So, and you know, going back, why you were saying, you know, as far as people need their classes, and you were breaking it down. Now, if people have the resources and they have the interest, doing more is not a bad thing, right?
I think doing more is not a bad thing as long as you've done the critical things already. Mm-hmm. I think that we want to make sure that we devote our resources to what our goals really are. Now, if your goals are really entertainment, well, then don't waste your time with my classes. Yeah, you'll have a little bit of fun. It'll be a good time. You'll smile and make new friends. But, you know, I'm not here for entertainment. I'm here for actual real training. But if you're here for real training, then get the real training done before you focus on the entertainment, and try not to get distracted. And this happens to everybody, whether you're working out of the gym or, you know, trying to get regular exercise in or doing work at work, we tend to do the things that we like to do more often.
Yeah.
That's not always what we need to do.
Right, right. And that's why you see so many big guys with little tiny stick legs. Somebody skipped leg day forever. So, you know, do you think that people do not identify or do they just not understand, you know, what they need?
I think it starts out with not understanding and then it comes into denial. I think that people begin with the absolute best intentions and maybe some ignorance. And I don't mean that in a disrespectful way. You know,
yeah.
There are things that I'm ignorant about. You know, I mentioned stamp collecting in a humorous way earlier in the show, and I'm ignorant about stamp collecting. So if there's anybody out there that knows about stamp collecting, you know, they'll own me on that because I don't know about it. I'm ignorant. Well, a lot of folks are ignorant about violence and what violence is really like. And if they're ignorant about violence, then it's awful hard to make good decisions about preparing yourself for violence. And if they buy into any of the hype that's out there about, you know, different trainers and different activities and what's fun and, oh, this is a blast, well, then they can find themselves in trouble. Not because they want to be in trouble, but just because they don't know.
Now, would you say that, so let's say this, without naming any names, if we were to pick any of the popular entertainment classes in existence, and let's say someone had only gone to those classes, and you plop them down in a self-defense situation, don't you think they'd probably still be a little bit better prepared than someone that hadn't done anything?
Yeah, probably. I think that they probably would, and only because the fact that a lot of those classes are going to have some reinforcement of the fundamental skills that are there and being able to get bullets to go where it is that you want them to go. And that's the shooting portion of defensive gun uses, is making the rounds go where they need to go. But I think that they could get so much farther, so much quicker in other ways. It goes the same with competition. You know, again, I'm not that anti-competition guy, and you can really learn how to run a gun well in competition. But what competition doesn't necessarily do is focus on the other areas, the decision-making processes that go along with defensive gun uses. And that's what's missing in those classes. And let's be honest with ourselves, it's missing in a lot of classes that are marketed as defensive classes as well. A lot of those classes miss out on anything other than the shooting portion.
Well, and I think that sort of, I mean, we were talking at the beginning of the show about as far as kind of types of instructors that people are expecting to see. And I think it may be, you know, maybe it just comes back to the type of instructors that we see the most of these days.
Sure.
And the types of instructors that we see the most of these days. And I'm not saying this in a bad way, because I cannot even begin to describe how much I appreciate their background and experience, but quite a few of them are coming home from the wars, you know, from actively seeking out and killing enemy combatants was the mission. And, you know, you can take lessons learned from that and apply it to civilian uses, but I don't know that you can build a civilian program around it.
And that's really the key to it. What the average person doesn't have is the resources to do the sorting through class after class after class after class to pick out the one or two things from that class that really apply to being an armed citizen. Now, you and I, or people that are trainers or trainees as a hobby, people that really seek this out and enjoy this, you know, we can go and get that entertainment. We can go and get that fun, and it's worth it to us to sort through. As an instructor, you know, I'll go take other classes just to see instruction techniques and sort through to pick out one or two little things. But this is what I do for a living. This is my vocation. And so that study there makes some sense. The average citizen that needs to make sure they are spending weekend time with the family, getting the extra work done that needs to get done, getting the email box inbox taken care of on the weekends, and getting the taxes finished, may not have the time and resource to sift through class after class after class to get those little golden nuggets.
Right.
And so what we want to do is give them the big pieces, the big rocks, if you want to call them that, that come in the critical aspects of defensive gun use and training.
So, Yeah, I mean, that's it. And I guess when you find a trainer that sort of resonates with you and seems to be speaking to what your everyday is most closely resembling, then that's sort of why people go one place and they tend to hang around one trainer. That's not to say that you need to get locked into someone's program, but, you know, maybe not a bad idea when you're looking at stuff like that.
When you find somebody that speaks to you, somebody that understands your concept, take some time and study them and study what they do and then move forward and then look for the next piece. It's really a puzzle that needs to be sorted out, and there are certainly people that can help you do that.
Right. So if people want to find out more about you or come take a class with you, I know we talked about it a little bit, but we're coming up on the end of the show.
Mm-hmm.
Where can they do that? What else you got working?
Well, you know, they can take a look. Definitely, Doc Wesson is the host of the Gun Nation podcast, and Doc has me as a co-host, and I enjoy that, so they can find me there at gunnation.us. In addition to that, safetysolutionsacademy.com/CDH. That's where I house my critical defensive handgun course. So ssa.training/CDH. I'd love you to come visit there and check out the course details. And if you find that it fits with your context, sign up.
Well, there you go, man. Hey, thanks for coming on the show tonight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, brother. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Yeah, be safe. So next week on Ballistic Radio, David Williams is going to be joining us to discuss the May 21st, 1996 Dayton police ambush at 3rd District HQ that he was involved in. Shooting that not enough attention was paid to, but a lot of interesting lessons can be learned from. Anyway, that's going to be next week. Make sure you check out our website, ballisticradio.com, like our Facebook page at facebook.com/ballisticradio. Thanks for listening, everyone. As always, be safe and see you next week.